Greetings. This is Stefko Sarasevic. The lecture today is Vocabulary and Languages in Indexing and Searching, and we are going to examine the connection between indexing and searching. As usual, let's state first what the central idea of the lecture is. And the idea is that indexing and searching, they are completely, totally connected. And that knowing searching is knowing indexing. You cannot search that which was not first indexed in some manner or others. I mean, there is no such thing. Everything has to be indexed first, even if the term index never appeared. Well, why do people do indexing? Well, it's done in order for documents or any information objects in order to be searched. There are great many ways to do indexing. To index, one needs an indexing language. To speak to the document, one needs a language. And there are great many indexing languages, as there are languages in the world. Well, even if one takes every word in a document, it is an indexing language. So let's go first to a table of content. We will have 54 slides. Five of them are title slides, so we end up with 49. Nine of the slides are devoted to definitions. Five are about controlled and uncontrolled vocabulary. Three are about inverted indexes. And 27 are about thesaurus, in where we treat thesaurus to something more than just being a thesaurus. And then there is only one slide about conclusions. Okay? Let's go to definitions and the nine slides that explore from general concepts to specific. Here are the set of concepts that we are going to define. On a general level, we are going to define what is a language, what is vocabulary. And on a specific level, we'll talk about index terms, indexing vocabulary, indexing language, descriptors, keywords, search terms, search vocabulary, and query language. All of these terms, all of these concepts rather than terms, are essential for you to have a full understanding as a searcher. General definitions. Encarta tells us that language deals with two things, basically. One is communication with words, the human use of spoken or written words as a communication system. But it's more than that. It is also a system of communication with its own set of conventions or special words. When we talk about vocabulary, these are the words of a language. And they could be also a words of a subject area associated with the subject or area of activities. Language has many components, such as morphology, semantics, syntax. Vocabulary is the words of a language. So language includes rules that about the using of the vocabulary. Well, here are specific definition, and probably the most important definition to really mull about is the index term. What is an index term? It is a word or a phrase that denotes, describes, a concept, and connote implies a class. It's extremely important to understand this denote and connote idea. The index term table describes an object that has the property of stableness, whatever that is. But this is how it denotes it. But it does another thing, which is important to understand. It implies all kinds of tables, wooden tables, big tables, picnic tables, marble tables, and so on. Well, we can, if desired, make more specific index terms. So we have wooden tables and marble tables as special index terms, but the term table and, by definition, any index terms implies a whole set of objects that have this property of being a table, the property of tableness. Indexing vocabulary is a set of index terms that's used in a given domain or for a given set of documents or objects. It could be even a single object, for instance, a book. Index at the end of the book is an index for a single object. Now, the indexing language is an indexing vocabulary together with rules, the syntax, the grammar for their application and use. So we make a difference and distinction between the vocabulary and the indexing language. And we will see later, it doesn't matter if indexing vocabulary is derived automatically every word in the text. It's still a language that has given the rules by which it is applied and selected and then later on used. More definitions? This is a term that is very, very often used in searching, and the term is descriptor. It was coined sometimes in the 1950s by the same guy, Calvin Woods, who coined the term information retrieval. And what it is, it's a word or a phrase that's used to identify a topic or an idea. It's an index term. It is part of a controlled vocabulary. And normally, usually, it's listed in the thesaurus that we'll talk about in some length later on. Any descriptor can then be also used as a search term. Now, keywords are very often the term is used, particularly in automatic indexing. It's a significant word from a text of a record which can be used as a search term in free text searching to retrieve all the records that contain it. The keywords could be assigned manually, but now it's mostly done automatically, and we will a little bit discuss that. As a matter of fact, the keywords is a key entry in automatic indexing. It's interesting that the notion of keyword comes from keystone, and keystone is the last stone that is put into arches and holds the whole construction of arches and is being used since Roman times when arches were invented. Okay, let's go on with some more definitions. And here are three terms that you as a searcher should really distinguish between. One is a question. The question is what I ask. And that question may be related to my information need, to a task, to problem at hand. The question may be well expressed, poorly expressed. You might need to help the user to express the question. Now, the question analysis is that process by which you take the concepts in the question and go on, elaborate upon them, and then working toward translating into search terms. You end up with a query. That is a question or any part thereof as stated for searching according to rules for a given system. So we make a big distinction between a question and a query. Question is what I'm talking about. Query is that which is being entered into a system. Here are a few more. A search term is a counterpart of index term. And it does the same thing. It denotes a concept and it connotes a class for a search. When you enter a search term table, you are searching for documents that have described all kinds of tables. A search vocabulary, it's a set of search terms in the domain that is available in a system. And finally, we have a query language. It is a search vocabulary together with rules for their use in searching. The query language, for instance, is in Google for specifying phrases is quite different than in Dialog, which is again quite different than in Scopus, which is again quite different than elsewhere. So the query language is very much dependent on the system that you are using. So consider Google, Dialog, and all the others as having a language of their own. They may be similar, and there may be a dialogue of a language, but they are still different languages. Well, let me go back to elaborate on that, and it's really important to understand. Question is what the user asks. You have to then elaborate as a searcher on the question. As a matter of fact, you may also aid the user in formulating, reformulating the question, and after you come up with something, asking new questions and so on. And the query is what is asked of a computer to match, which is put in searching. So a question is that which is transferred in the query. Here's an example. What are some major historical developments in the area of information retrieval? When I transfer that in a query in Google, that'll be like history, information retrieval. And when I transfer it in Dialog, it could be history and information with retrieval. Plus, you have to select files which you search. So you can see the transformation of a query is also, from a question to a query, is also system dependent. They have different dialects and sometimes even different questions. Here's some more. Keith van Rijsselberghe has written a classic text on information retrieval, and that text is now available online for free, and you can click there and get that classic there. But he said the same thing, but maybe even simpler than I do. An index language is the language used to describe documents and requests. These two things are connected, and we have to think about the indexing languages. Describe documents first, describe requests second. The elements of the index language are index terms, which may be derived from the text of the document to be described or may be arrived at independently. The vocabulary of an index language may be controlled or uncontrolled. So what he is describing is that the index terms may be derived from the text, the computers can derive from the text, and may be arrived at independently. An indexer may index the index terms. He raised the issue of controlled or uncontrolled, and this is where we are going next. Five slides on this, and I'll describe some of our approaches and some of the tensions between that. Okay? Controlled vocabulary is that vocabulary that is predetermined. It tells the indexer what terms to be used in indexing. A controlled vocabulary may also show the relations between the terms, for instance, thesaurus, subject heading list, seal subject list, classifications, and so on. It does another thing, and this is a very important thing, it also indicates what you may select for searching. So, a controlled vocabulary, the way it's thought of, is that is both. It is an indexing tool, and for you, it is a searching tool. The controlled vocabulary is humanly constructed. There is no such thing as automatically constructing vocabulary, although there are many software that will help in construction of vocabularies. So here are some examples. One of the prime example of controlled vocabulary is the medical subject heading of the National Library of Medicine. I'm sipping green tea today with that is laced with honey, and it's excellent. I can recommend it. Well, the medical subject headings is probably one of the largest and most comprehensive list of controlled vocabulary, and is used both in National Library of Medicine for indexing and searching. It has more than 22,000 descriptors, 106,000 cross-references, 139,000 what they call supplementary concepts, approximately 50 publication types in member fields. Well, in the field of publication type, they have over 50. It's done by indexers. And they have a whole department that does nothing but updates mesh, and then the indexes apply it. But at the National Library of Medicine, they are also experimenting and using semi-automatic indexing, where on the first run there will be an index created by a machine that then will be corrected, supplemented by indexes. It's interesting to go there and see how this is done. I visited several times the National Library of Medicine, and it's on a beautifully, beautiful area and on a hill in Bethesda, Maryland. Grounds are manicured, and there is this building that ecologically fits beautifully. It's about a two-story building that kind of melts into that surrounding grounds. And first time I went there and said, this is a National Library of Medicine? This building? It's a gorgeous building, but it's measly and small. You go in, and then they took me where indexing is done. You go to the elevator, and you go down. The building is down. It's a skyscraper built into the ground, and you go seven floors down and down, and the last level are the indexes. It's well worth visiting. So if you're in Washington, don't just go to the zoo and to the museums and the mall. Go also to the National Library of Medicine. Okay, let us talk about uncontrolled vocabulary. They are derived now, this is derived from text. It very often is called natural language. I always thought that this is a ludicrous phrase, because what is an unnatural language? Well, it's derived from natural languages documents, and nowadays it's derived automatically. And they're using various ways of algorithms. They started using very simple algorithms that Hans-Peter Loon developed in the late 50s, early 60s. Just take every word in text, in the title, for instance, and drop the stop words. Nowadays, it's much, much more complicated. For instance, there are algorithms that will count the appearance of the word in a text. So if the text has a phrase, and they will even parse phrases, digital library or library, quite often, that becomes a much more important term by weight for this particular document. But they do more. They, for instance, take all the words in all the texts, 100,000, million documents, and they create this humongous dictionary where they have the appearance of all the words, and then they weigh how much does library appear in this document versus how much does the term library appear in the total universe of all the documents under the system. And then they create an algorithm by which they weigh the term library so that when you search, they are attempting to retrieve the most relevant documents. So these algorithms could be very, very complex. As a matter of fact, they're getting more and more complex, and they're constantly experimenting and testing which algorithm is better. Well, the uncontrolled vocabulary is used in construction of inverted indexes. In turn, inverted indexes are used in searching. Here is a comparison. The idea of the controlled vocabulary was and is, and it's a good idea, it's a correct idea, to reduce variability of expression while being indexed and while searched for. It reduces variability so that you make sure that which the computer does to assign a heavy weight to the term library, the descriptor does it by an indexer selecting, oh, this document is about library, so it should have. And the other document that just mentioned library in passing, it doesn't get that descriptor. But it is manual, it's costly, it's time-consuming. In some system, they are trying to do semi-automatic. And of course, it's dynamic. It needs constant changing and updating. I already mentioned that the National Library of Medicine, as do other big organizations, have whole departments that deal nothing but with that controlled vocabulary. The uncontrolled or free vocabulary is the idea is to follow the natural language expression as they occur in document. Could be automatic, I say could be automatic, because as we mentioned in the last lecture, a concordance built by monks in the 20th century is uncontrolled vocabulary. It has great advantages, and nowadays it's derived by algorithms, and as I mentioned, these are constantly changing and improving. For instance, they are now parsing into phrases, connections, and so on. And today, the uncontrolled vocabulary is the king, and the controlled vocabulary is kind of passing down. And one of the things, why is it passing out, not down, down and out? Why is it passing out? Because it's so costly. It needs indexes, and the thesaurus need updating and so on. And the idea is, let's try to make algorithms that computers derive terms more and more efficient. And here's the last slide. There is a constant controversy that goes on for decades and decades. And it's an endless source of debate and controversy, of control versus free text searching. You have proponents of one versus proponents of the others. And the loudest, of course, are the proponents of controlled searching. And even today, after all the decades of controversies, this issue is still live and going. The issue is not controlled, should I use controlled or should I use free text. Both of them have a place in searching, depending on the circumstances, what you want to achieve, and retrieve goals. Controlled vocabulary is, for instance, excellent for precision. And if your goal is to have high, precisely answers, by all means use descriptors. But if your goal is to have a broad search where you miss nothing, you are not going to use that many descriptors. Each has strengths and weaknesses. Now, there have been many, many lists that kind of compare them. What are their strengths, what are their weaknesses? And this is a good searching assignment. Go and find what are the strengths and weaknesses of controlled and free text. Well, users today, they don't have a clue, most of them, that there is such a thing as controlled vocabulary, so they use free text searching. As a matter of fact, quite a few searches ignore it too. But the professional searches, being professional, have to use both, but both as warranted. They have to know when to use and what not to use a controlled vocabulary or free text searching. So here is a credo. Know thine controlled vocabulary so you can apply it in searching as you need it or when you need it. Not always, but not also ignore it. Well, let's go to inverted indexes. We already talked about them, but let's see how they are used in indexing. They're useful to know how they function to understand search, because all the databases have them, all are searching in some way, but they may be differently organized in the computer, but that's what's being used. The steps are, each document is indexed, every document in the word is taken as index terms, with the exception of stop words, if any. Google has some stop words, and they don't explain exactly which they are, but they mention that the common words are their stop words. Dialogue has 9, Web of Science has 100 or more stop words and so on. They are counted, but they are not used as indexing. The position in text is noted, even as I said for stop words. Then indexes for all documents are merged. Then index terms are arranged alphabetically someplace in the bowel of the system so that they can be searched. Search is always done on the inverted index. So under each index terms are documents. or document numbers in which it appears the position and text for that document. So when you search for terms digital libraries, we already talked about it, but I want to underscore how this works. The computer takes the term digital and looks for all the documents that have digital, and that looks for all the documents that have libraries, and then compares to see which document have both terms in common. Then provides you the list of those documents that have that common. The concept of doing that and in searching was defined by a guy named Taube in 1950s, and he invented the term coordinate indexing, which means that you coordinate the terms at searching. You don't index digital libraries and the input as was usually done, but you coordinate it in searching, so that where the coordinate indexing term came from and the concept came from. So, but you have variations on the theme. You can search digital with libraries or digital in quotes libraries as a phrase. Well, the computer goes through the same steps as before, but then it looks for documents where digital is positioned right before libraries. Remember, the computer knows position with each terms in the library. So searching for a phrase is really a form of searching connected with AND, but in a given sequence. I already gave you here an example, digital with libraries, dialogue, digital libraries, quotes, other systems such as Scopus and Google. So you can see that here it is, the language, the rules of the language differ from system to system, and you have to learn how does the system, for instance, handle searching of phrases. Well, here's an example of searches with an invented file. We have four documents. Document number one, slow brown truck arrived, shipment of brownies damaged in a fire, delivery of brownies arrived in a slow truck, document three, and then four, shipment of brownies arrived in the truck. We have stop words, A off and in, that we dumped, but counted. And then the term arrive, for instance, appears in document 1, position 4, in document 3, position 4, in document 4, position 4, brown, and so on. They appear in these documents and the positions are counted. So the search for slow and truck gets the results document 1 and 3, since both contain slow and truck. But the search slow with truck as a phrase, that means that they should appear one and after the other, is retrieved only in document 3, in which slow is the 7th and truck is the 8th position. Document 1 has both slow and truck, but it is not retrieved because they are not next to each other. This is a very simplified, even almost dumb example, but it illustrates the point. So everything in the world is inverted, and it has consequences to searching. All words in all fields are inverted, in title, in full text, even in descriptors, in the authors, and so on. Thus, they all become searchable. In some system, phrases are parsed and thus become searchable. So, some advanced systems will search you for phrases automatically. But in others, you have to say either with or with quotes or something like that to identify phrases. Now, you have to beware of this. For instance, when you search for libraries as a descriptor, and here is an example how you search it in dialogue. In other systems, you can also search for a descriptor, but it may be different. It will retrieve all the descriptors where libraries appear, in addition to the scripted libraries itself. So you search libraries as scriptors, you'll get academic libraries, public libraries, and so on. There are neat tricks to avoid that. If you just want libraries without appearing as academic and so on in dialogue, instead of putting /DE, you put the DF. But that is already going into advanced tricks of dialogue. Okay, let's now go to the biggest part of our lecture, the thesaurus. It is a major tool for controlled vocabulary and information retrieval, but it's more. It's much more. Out of the notion of thesaurus, we can get some extremely important notions of effective searching, and we will explore those, even if you never consider the thesaurus. So what is a thesaurus? Jessica Milstead, in 2000, wrote a neat set of kind of definitions and short tools, and I urge you to click there and examine it. For writers, it is a tool like Roget's, and we all are familiar with Roget's thesaurus. One with words grouped and classified to help select the best word to convey a specific nuance of meaning. So, for indexing and searching, it's an information storage and retrieval tool. It's a tool. A listing of words and phrases authorized for use in an indexing system. I wouldn't use the word authorized. Nobody authorized them. They used them to describe them, together with relationships, variants, and synonyms, and aids into navigation through the thesaurus. Well, David Batty defined it much simpler. A thesaurus to an information scientist is a controlled set of terms used to index information in a database and therefore also to search for information in that database. So the same concepts are represented by the same term. That's the essence. That's the absolute essence. That the same concept are represented in indexing and in searching by that given term. Well, good old Peter Michael Roget. And Peter Michael Roget was actually a physician that even wrote some very significant texts about tuberculosis. But he had a most useful idea in the 1980s and did a fantastic job. And to this day, thesaurus and Roget are kind of connected together. Following this idea, thesaurus that came out a century in the 1890s, about half a century later, the thesaurus became the major tool for controlled vocabulary information retrieval. Starting to this day, great many information retrieval thesaurus have been developed for all kinds of subjects. All have a similar structure and function. And let's examine some of these. Here is a vocabulary links from a seminar by Bella Haas. And here is what Bella asked. Wishes to answer such question, what did women start wearing hats and why? What were the first hats made of? Did beret really come from France? And then she did a search and got 32,000 documents, and then she got these kinds of sentences. Versace's friend passed a hat to help him. The fashion world took off their hats to wear wongs, and the new Israeli designer has just tossed his hat into the ring. And as you can see, the word hat was used in very, very different contexts. So she suggested, as did everybody else, that thesaurus will help you with not getting these things when a hat is tossed into the ring. But, as I already mentioned, it's very difficult and costly to do. So, there were standards. The international standard Z3919, which is an extremely important standard, followed all around the world, has defined what's the construction and format. And then there is followed by construction of controlled vocabulary, a primary, primer. There is quite a few, about a dozen or more software that are available for constructing of thesaurus, and they are listed here in a list by American Society for Indexing. There are a great many thesaurus. I once even found a thesaurus for bakery products. And if you click on these, there's online thesauri that you can find. Among them, for instance, is a very important international one, which is used much more abroad than is used here, is the UNESCO thesaurus. And among them is the Eric thesaurus. And we use it here, for example. And let's look at this Eric thesaurus a little bit. Here it is. And you can see that Eric thesaurus, you can browse to alphabetically, and then you see that you have here big terms that you can browse on and look for terms within these general categories. You can, of course, also search for that particular thesaurus. Here is the component that it encompasses. A descriptor, which is the basic entry into thesaurus, has these five components. Scope notes, it defines the context in which it's used. For instance, when the word vehicle or tank is used, there could be a tank as a weapon, and there could be tank as a container, and it describes you, this descriptor is used as a container, and then gives you the broader terms, higher, the narrower terms, the related terms, and the synonyms, which are not used in the descriptions, but are suggested. Well, not all of these may be present, so a searcher or indexer can use as a guide for selection or rejections or for browsing to get ideas. This concept is so important that we'll get to that and elaborate a little bit later. Here's the structure. With variation of theme, all thesauri in the world have the same conceptual structure. And this is the structure, by the way, that the standards provide too. There's a descriptor that lists broader terms, that lists related terms, the terms for synonyms. It has the scope notes that I already described, and then it has the narrower terms. It may not look like this in this graph, but this graph represents what the thesaurus does. As again, I said, not every descriptor has to have broader terms, or not every descriptor has to have, but this is what the structure is. Well, Eric has its own thesaurus, and that thesaurus is important into dialogue, and that thesaurus is important into Ovid, and what you're going to discover now is that each of these use the thesaurus, the same thesaurus, in its own way. Principles are all the same. So what we have here is that the same thing was important in those systems, but used differently. The cat was differently, whatever you do with cats. So the Eric thesaurus allows for searching for words that are included in the descriptors by given categories. It allows you for browsing alphabetically. It tells you, I already showed you, about 40 categories. So, a search for libraries, for instance, in all categories finds 50 descriptors that have library included. And out of these, I selected. Here's how the Eric, here's the descriptor. And here are other descriptors that use the libraries, and this is used for also. Now, neat, right? You can find the scriptures and so on, but look how what this serves for something also very different. You can actually, if you are searching for libraries, you can actually look at this, and this gives you ideas of what other terms you should look for, not only thesaurus terms, but thesaurus in general. So you can browse through these and look what these are doing, so it can help you in formulation in your question analysis to eventually formulate your query. So I'm pointing out that the thesaurus has more roles in searching than just control vocabulary searching. It has this important role that is a great, great tool for question analysis. So even if you don't intend to use the descriptors, it's worth looking at them when you have to elaborate on the concepts. In a very convoluted way, Eric Thesaurus and others ended up in dialogue. So you begin in file one, then you expand the desired terms, and here we use the term library. Then you will see something called R, and R means related, that certain terms have related terms, meaning that these are thesaurus entries. So the moment you see an R with the term, you know that there is a thesaurus there. Then you can expand on that. Then you can browse and choose which ones to use. So, dialogue and some other terms have this neat way of dialogue and some other systems has a neat way to display all entries in an inverted indexes, and the term expand, it is really a very useful term and you can play with it. So expand library will provide alphabetical list of term library, alphabetical list, okay, remember inverted index. And then in basic index terms, and then after, you can expand it again. So you can expand, and then expand to get further. For instance, expand author equals Sarasaric. It will provide you alphabetical list of all entries in the author additional index around that name. And it may be other than Sarasaric T, maybe there are several others with the last name that are also authors, but you will also see the misspelling of that particular author name. Okay, here's the example. Expand library. So, in Eric. So what we get is a whole list. And the author, the dialogue gives you 50 of these terms, and you have to click page to get the next 50 and so forth. So the term library has 46,865 entries, and the related terms, here we find that the library administration, which was added at that date, who cares, has 14 related terms. So we go, and that was E9. Remember E9 here? So we select, we say expand E9. It's a neat trick. You can expand and expand. And then we get that there are 14 related terms to library administrations. And now we have all these related terms. One can expand, for instance, on library services, and you can select any of them and say search for, select R7, and you will get everything about library standards. So we will select R15. Remember, here's R15. And expand on that, and this is how many documents we get for this particular thing. I love bungalow, and this is, and I love the sea, so I have no idea why I selected this picture and why is it in this place, but it's okay. So here we are gone. Here is one document that we got, and here is the descriptors that document have. Now you can use these descriptors or the terms in the title or the authors to do additional searching. Here we are, same thesaurus, but in Ovid that uses library and library literature and information science, the same database that you used in dialogue. So you enter the term libraries, you start with that, and you can get to the thesaurus. And here is how they display the thesaurus. For instance, I selected this one to enlarge, and then got others, all the other terms that are listed. You can scroll down, it tells you how many hits they have, and then you can kind of select these to go on. So we have the same thesaurus and same related terms. You built something. So next what you'll go is you'll select these additional terms or search for libraries only, see number of results, you'll select fields and formats. And I suggest that you repeat this exercise. You can get to this database in Ovid right from Rutgers Libraries. They have it. Well, my point here is that you should be aware of the same thesaurus. It had handled differently by different databases. Tough. You have to, well, you know, we have different cars. Same principles, but they're handling quite differently the engines or whatever you're doing. So you have to, when you buy a car or rent a car, you have to get familiar with that too. Let's go to another subject, and this is an extremely important subject, but it is connected with what we are talking about. Relevance feedback is a very, very important search tactics and is very closely connected to effective searching. It is a method for using in information in judgments in documents that have been judged relevant to further define the query and change the search. First you find the relevant documents, and in relevant documents you browse titles, descriptors, I just show you descriptors that you can browse, identify abstracts and so on to get lead, for instance, what other keywords to search. And in some advanced systems, this is being done automatically for you. So, in the next two slides, we are getting to the most important part of this lecture that deals with effective searching. Well, the query expansion, the expanding of the query, it's another important search tactic. It's a very important search tactic. So you can expand the query by relevance feedback. You can expand it by many others. So there are query expansion is a method by which you add, modify, change the search terms in the query. You broaden the query focus, you change the terms, and so on. Great many sources can be used for query expansion. I already mentioned relevance feedback, I showed you thesaurus, dictionaries, but you can go to a textbook and look at, you can go even to a dictionary. You can use documents, you can go catalogs. Guess what? You can ask your user that you have this term, what other terms do they suggest? Many years ago when I was a searcher, the most important job was to take a search statement sent by, or a search question sent by a user, and then expand it. And I went to textbook, and very often I called the user then and said, you ask about single crystal, do you also mean such and such crystal and so on? And then the user started talking. Once you get them talking, they talk. You will have a hard time stopping them. And you get ideas what to do it. So some of them you come from your own mind and your experience. Some systems will suggest the terms for a query. Okay, here is probably the most important concept that you should learn for expansion. And this is what is built in into the DNA of every professional searches. You can use the same structure that is used in the thesaurus for query expansion. So think of this structure that way. Draw it someplace, paste it on the wall till it gets to be the second nature of you, like when you're driving a car and you get to intersection to show the directional signals. You may not show them all the time, but it's built into you as a driver that you should show them. So you should always think that you have a query term and you should ask, what broader terms could I use? What narrower terms could I use? What are the related terms for this query? What are the synonyms? The query terms, maybe, I don't know, dogs, the broader terms, domestic animals, pets. The narrower terms, maybe schnauzers, lab retrievals. The related terms, I don't know, cats. No, cats are not good related terms for dogs, but other wolves are related to dogs. The synonyms may be doggy and so forth. So think of query expansion in these terms. This is a DNA of a searcher for effective searching. One slide for conclusion. At the base of all searching are terms, which are organized in vocabulary, which are organized in languages, and we defined how you have rules for languages. And we know, like in human languages, there are tons of languages for indexing, and there are tons of dialects of languages. In reality, in searching, there is no completely controlled or completely uncontrolled vocabulary. It's a matter of degree. And most importantly, it's a matter of mastery. So, symbolically, searching and indexing are connected. Controlled and free vocabulary are connected. Well, thank you, Van Gogh. Okay, bye.